Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Dr. Heidi Hornick, professor of art history. Dr. Hornick joined the Baylor faculty in 1990. She's an expert on Italian Renaissance and Baroque work, has received recognition for both teaching and publication in the field at Baylor, and last year she was awarded a visiting scholar fellowship at Harvard. She spent the 2017 spring semester in Cambridge. Dr. Hornick is the author of numerous books and publications and has lectured in locations like Naples, Florence, Rome, and Oxford, and each summer she devotes time to research throughout archives, libraries, and museums in Florence, Italy. Very busy, and she's with us today on the program. Dr. Heidi Hornick, it's great to visit with you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to visit with you here about an important topic, and a topic where we talk about the arts, something that through Illuminate I think we're going to be hearing and seeing more about here at Baylor University in the months ahead. And before we talk more about what you do here at Baylor, let's go all the way back. When you think about art and painting, when did that first capture you? Was that something from an early stage that you knew you wanted to be part of your life's work?
Well, I think like many things, it begins with travel. People really begin to appreciate the arts when they travel, when they experience new cultures. And that happened to me my sophomore year of social studies class in high school.
Where did you travel?
We went to Italy.
Italy. And what do you remember a scene, or where was that moment, that kind of aha moment that you had?
I think when I got off the plane in Milan, and I'm from New York, and it looked a lot like New Jersey. I mean, it was very, very much industrial. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this is somewhat familiar. And then once we got in the city and seeing Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper and just experiencing a culture that had a completely different language, it was just something that I kind of tucked away in my heart, I think.
Mm-hmm. What is it about art and specifically your discipline in painting that speaks to you still now?
Well, what I've always liked, Christian art. And most of the Italian Renaissance, as you know, in the 15th and 16th centuries, is focused on subjects that are either biblical or from Catholic doctrine, especially. And then I also like the historical side of it because that's when the Protestant Reformation occurs in 1517, and then the reaction to that in the Baroque. So the Renaissance kind of covers a lot of the historical and periods that are exciting to me.
Well, we want to talk to you as the show goes on about that intersection between faith and art. And certainly you've got a copy of your book, which focuses a lot on that, which we're going to talk about as well. It's sitting here on the desk in the studio. But, you know, talk about the work that you and your colleagues are doing. I know your discipline is art history, but you have so many colleagues whose expertise is in a wide array of fields in the Department of Art and Art History. Could you give us an overview? If we walked in on any given weekday into the Hooper Schaefer Fine Arts Building, what are some of the exciting things that we might see that you and your colleagues and your students are doing?
Well, I think you really hit it when you said the students, because we always have student work up in the hallways, whether it's my colleague Winter Roslowski's painting class or Paul McCoy ceramics, or some of the numerous drawing classes that we have. So you really get a sense of what we're doing by what the students are producing. And it's a wonderful nod to them to have such high-quality work in the hallways.
When you think about the various disciplines in art and art history at Baylor, what are some of those unifying principles that say this is Baylor art and art history?
I think we all have the same common goal that we are an undergraduate department, and we've chosen to stay an undergraduate department, true to Baylor's, you know, really legacy. Mm-hmm. And we've focused on the undergraduates in all the different concentrations, whether it's graphic design or art history. And we've also introduced a minor, which also, again, focusing on the undergraduates and what they can bring to the table.
When you think about the work that Baylor students are doing, what stands out to you about their talent, just that relationship, as you talk about being undergrad-focused, of imparting and teaching and helping them kind of see the world in an expanded way?
Well, from the art history point of view, some of the people that I'm most proud of, we have the typical medical school and law school people, because art history is such a critical analysis discipline that they're very well trained in thinking on their feet and also getting sources and precedents and making a case and arguing a point based on historical documentation. But some of the things that people have gone on to do that I'm most proud of probably is we had one student who went on for an MBA at Yale in not-for-profit art, and then wound up starting an art cultural center in Brazil, which was very exciting. And then another one who went to UT for her master's in art history, and she's working for the State Department, also with the idea of kind of introducing culture into various places where she goes.
That's exciting, kind of illuminating other areas mm-hmm. with what they learn here at Baylor. That's great. Visiting with Dr. Heidi Hornick, professor of art history at Baylor, and your focus is Italian Renaissance and Baroque art, and you know, you're a leading expert on those topics here in the nation. And tell us a little bit about what's unique about those. What distinguishes those works from others for those of us who maybe aren't as familiar with the topic as you?
Sure. Everyone likes the Renaissance, probably because everyone knows of Michelangelo and Leonardo and Raphael and maybe Piero della Francesca. And these are the big names that you hear about. I work on a 16th century painter who was a very good friend of Michelangelo's, named Michele Tozzini. And some of the work that has been influential for me is not only finding letters that were exchanged about him with Michelangelo and Duke Cosimo de' Medici, everybody knows the Medicis, but also the fact that I was able to get into the Archivio di Stato, the state archives, and find his last will and testament and basically recreate his life. His daughters were both nuns. His one son continued the workshop of the Ghirlandaio, which was the same workshop that Michelangelo trained in. So that's been very exciting to have a topic literally that I've worked on most of my career that I got as a graduate student.
You know, you're almost it's like an archaeologist looking for facts mm-hmm. instead of bones. What are some of the things you're looking for? And how do, when you're in Florence or elsewhere, the information that you find, how does it help you better understand the paintings and the work and even that era that you're seeing?
Well, you've hit on something we call connoisseurship, where if you have something that's documented and signed and has a provenance and has hard, cold evidence in some kind of a paper trail, that's great. But most paintings don't have that. So it really is a matter of looking and seeing as much as you can. So we're kind of back to the travel and the visiting as much as possible to museums all over the world. And this is what I tell my students. You know, you need to get out every time you go to a new city, go to that museum and walk through it and go through the areas that you've been trained in, like my Renaissance students, but also go through the modern and go through the ancient and just try to put things back together in your mind, because so much of it is based on what the audience sees and how they respond to it.
Talking to Professor of Art History, Dr. Heidi Hornick, and when you talk about your research and you're going to some beautiful and amazing places and digging through some ancient papers, what do you enjoy? It sounds like it could be a fun process. Mm-hmm. What's that process look like, and what's that thrill of discovery like when you find something meaningful?
Well, I always tell my students the story of the last will and testament. The archives were being moved from underneath the Uffizi, the major museum in Florence, into a new building, and they hadn't yet put them in what we would call closed stacks, like in libraries. And they basically opened a door about the size of this room, into the size of this room, and all of the last will and testaments, all the notary documents, were floor to ceiling. And I just sat there and went through one after another. And then when you finally get that document, it's a little like a needle in a haystack, but when you find it, it like I said, it goes on for 20 years of work. So that's pretty exciting. You have to be very patient and persevere,
I'm sure.
But it's also very exciting, and it really has become the thing where now if there's a painting that might be a Tozzini anywhere in the world, people contact me. So Sotheby's, Christie's, Dorotheum, Vienna, New York. Doesn't matter. I mean, they'll send me an email and say, "Do you think this is a Michele Tozzini painting?" And that's what connoisseurship is. It's based on the knowledge that you have by seeing and the knowledge that you find in the documents.
What's special about Tozzini and his work that really speaks to you?
Well, I like the period of mannerism, and I'm actually teaching a seminar right now, an undergraduate seminar, just on that topic, because in the last 5 years, there have been four major shows, one in New York, Michelangelo Drawings, one in Frankfurt called La Maniera, two in Florence, Cinquecento in Florence, which means the 16th century in Florence. So finally, the 16th century is really getting a lot of attention, because previously it was just called the Late Renaissance, and it wasn't quite yet the Baroque. But now it's its own style, and it's that period I described, that mm-hmm. transitional stage that encounters the Protestant Reformation and the Catholic Counter-Reformation.
That's great. We're talking to Dr. Heidi Hornick, professor of art history on Baylor Connections. And you know, you've talked about certainly the religious aspects to Renaissance painting. So let's focus more on that. Now, I know while at Harvard last year, you worked on your book, The Art of Christian Reflection. Let's talk about that broadly and then delve in. What role does faith play in the way you approach your discipline in teaching research or just simply in appreciating human creativity from that period?
Well, first of all, thank you for bringing up the book. Mm-hmm. Baylor University Press did this book, and I've done many books, but I really wanted to do one with them. And this mm-hmm. was just a perfect fit,
I think.
And they've done a great job, 80 full-color illustrations. And it's the kind of book where you don't have to be a specialist. You don't have to be a Christian. But it is called The Art of Christian Reflection, and it's based on a series that was ran for 20 years, four times a year, out of the Center for Christian Ethics at Baylor. And each issue was thematically driven. So that kind of forced me to think of things not in a historical or chronological way, but rather in a thematic way that crossed the entire history of art. And that's what this book has done. When I went to Harvard, I went back to the individual entries and found out what had been written since I wrote on them and researched on them, and how could I think of them more as a unit. And so the book is divided up into three different areas. And the first is kind of habits and virtues. What is the contemporary Christian thinking about? Generosity, patience, for example, or some of those. And then kind of the formative practices. So, what do we do about those things? How can we reflect on generosity and look at this art and think about it in a different way and maybe be more inclusive with who we contribute to or who we consider as part of our world? Then the second section is on the moral issues, gambling, pornography, prison overcrowding, things such as that. And then the final one has more to do with liturgical practices. So what do we do to get to be better Christians? For example, scripture is one of the chapters.
You know, it's a noisy world, and perhaps art in some ways kind of almost beckons us to pause a little bit. What are some of the things that, you know, as maybe you sit and consider some of these things, what do you want people to take away from this just in terms of the way they approach some of these topics you just discussed?
Well, I think when you look at a visual image for longer than your 20 or 30 seconds, that you see a billboard or that you see something very quickly on Facebook or on the internet, when you really start to think about it, you begin to have thoughts that go deeper than just, okay, this is, for instance, the cover of the book is, an image of a Good Samaritan. We all know the story of the Good Samaritan, but then when you actually think about it in the context of being generous towards people different from you, it becomes more contemporary.
Visiting with Dr. Heidi Hornick, and Dr. Hornick, you've written about art history and theology in a number of different ways. What are some of the ways the intersection of those two topics? I know you go into even more in depth in the book, but just the way one influences the other, the way your faith helps you appreciate art more, and the way maybe art helps you view your own faith.
That's a great question. I have to say that it began because my husband, Michael Parsons, is a biblical scholar here of New Testament. Luke and Acts is his expertise in the religion department here. And we wanted to collaborate. We've been married 26 years, and we wanted to write books together. So we started thinking, well, let's look at some paintings together. And for instance, we looked at The Last Supper, and Mike said to me, why is John the Beloved sleeping? And I said, I'm not sure. And then we went back to it, and the scripture said, rest on the breast of Jesus. So the artist interpreted rest on the breast of Jesus as John the Beloved sleeping. So little things like that just started to, get our attention. And it grew into three books, all called Illuminating Luke. And we took one section that were just five paintings related to the infancy narrative, and then the public ministry, and then the passion and death resurrection narratives.
What do you appreciate most? What do you learn most about divine creativity, maybe through some of the inspired works like that that you see?
Well, I was thinking about vocation, for example. You know, many people will say that people who are called to preach or called to be good Christians What are they looking at? How do you visualize that? And Caravaggio does it for us. The calling of Saint Matthew. You know, Jesus goes into a tavern with Peter, and probably a very, very famous work of art is the Caravaggio calling of Saint Matthew in Rome. And he basically points to him across the table, and Matthew pretty much looks at him, you know, goes, "Who, me?" And many of us do that. Many of us say, you know, "No, it's not me. I'm not the one who's supposed to be doing that. You know, somebody's more qualified than I am." So I think that kind of calling to discipleship, we can find that in many, many paintings, especially in the book, The Art of Christian Reflection.
As you work with your students, and of course that's a great fit here at Baylor University, what are some of the things you're trying to impart besides just knowledge that can benefit them when they're professionals someday?
Well, I think with art history, as I mentioned before, it always has a very critical component to it. It's somewhat subjective, and you have to kind of rationalize what you've read and what you believe, and then come to a result of really your interpretation of a painting. And I think that works very nicely for students of faith. I would probably teach very differently if I stayed at a state school kind of complex, you know. It would be a group of people who were not conscious of Scripture and probably weren't practicing their faith like our students are. So in a way, I kind of come with a nice, good foundation with our students, and then we can kind of build on that to make it more personal for them and along the way develop their critical thinking skills.
You talk about teaching undergrad students, but the research component can influence them as well, whether it's research you do for your own writing or just for your own knowledge. How does that influence what you do in the classroom? How does your research benefit your teaching?
Well, that was the research was exactly the result of this mannerism seminar. And I laughed the other day. I said, I've been teaching here for 29 years and I'm still writing new lectures. Who does that, you know? Well, someone does that when there's five new shows on the 16th century called Mannerism. And you want to get the new material out to these students. And they've loved it. They really have. One student who's having her BFA show, I read her artist statement for it, and I'm about to see the works for it. And she's been inspired by the class to show how those works influenced her works as a contemporary Christian artist.
Talking to Dr. Heidi Hornick here on Baylor Connections, and you know, we mentioned the research you do. A lot of it takes place in Florence. How does being in a place like Florence, beautiful and historical, you know, you're there in the summer, but what part of that do you carry with you throughout the rest of the year, whether it's your personally, what you do with your students, or just the way that being a place like that can carry over for the longer haul?
It's so true. It's the kind of thing where you kind of, you kind of hibernate. You know, you get all that you can during the summer, and then you write it up, and you think it through, and you sit down at the computer, and things that you really don't want to do when you're in Florence. I mean, when you're in Florence, you want to go to the archives, you want to see the art, you want to enjoy the city, of course, you want to enjoy the food. And then when you come back and you're working, it's the time to, you know, kind of get it all out there and think about it and assimilate it and write it down and publish it.
Is it one of those things that refreshes you a little bit when you go there?
Always, always. And I try to make at least one trip during the year, sometimes more, but the same kind of thing, to just kind of rejuvenate. You're always better in the classroom, I think, when your research and your teaching intersect. And that definitely has happened for me my whole career at Baylor. And I've been very fortunate because Baylor's been very generous with those kinds of travel to conferences, to cities, to exhibitions, which are so important for me.
Well, Dr. Hornick, as we head into the final couple of moments of the program, that's talking about your research and your teaching, a great way to lead into the fact that excellence in art, in human performance through the arts and athletics, and of course, certainly in your discipline, we're talking about the arts. That's one of the four foundational pillars of Baylor's new academic strategic plan, Illuminate. For you and your colleagues, what does it mean? What does it communicate? And what are the opportunities involved when a university places such an importance on your discipline and the discipline of other colleagues throughout the arts and music and other related areas?
Well, we're certainly, I'm very sure I can speak for all my arts colleagues that we're very appreciative of having that focus. A university, whether it's STEM or STEAM, has to be the full picture. And the science and technology and engineering and math, we've separated them, I think, artificially from the arts, when in fact a liberal arts degree is exactly that, holistically all of the arts and sciences. So creativity is a gift, being able to paint, being able to think critically, just as a scientist or a mathematician or an anthropologist can be creative in their work and their new discoveries. In some ways, ours are even more tangential because tangible because you can see the painting that's resulting or the giraffe sculpture that my colleague Robbie Barber's doing for the Cameron Park Zoo. This giant steel thing that's going to be a permanent part of our landscape. That's entirely in his brain. That's what creativity is, and it's God-given.
Are there some ways you've seen that you enjoy seeing? Certainly your students are in the art discipline themselves, but perhaps other students or colleagues across campus, the way those, maybe the light bulb goes off in some ways when they're able to relate something they see artistically to their own discipline.
Well, and as I said, that's kind of what I feel about this BFA student, is that, you know, she's able to take something from an art history class and apply it to her own personal art, rather than just understanding what the 16th century motivations were or what religion in the 16th century was like. But instead, how do those forms and figures move around in her head and then creatively come out in an original work of art?
That's very exciting. Dr. Heidi Hornick, we'll look forward to seeing more about what you and your colleagues have in store in the months ahead and through Illuminate and some of the ways that helps expand and grow our ability to see what you do and what you're able to do in your department. So thank you very much for your time today. I've enjoyed this conversation.
It's been great. Thank you, Derek.
Dr. Heidi Hornick, professor of art history at Baylor University, our guest today on Baylor Connections. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections, or you can subscribe on iTunes. I'm Derek Smith. Thanks for joining us on Baylor Connections.